the Goethe University in Frankfurt. And much like Dermot, he has research issues generally in philosophy, wide-ranging interest in philosophy and practical and theoretical philosophy, including especially aesthetics and film, but not only those, but approaches them from both the continental and analytic traditions, much like Dermot. As far as I know, he doesn't systematically disagree with Dermot, so we will see if that is still the case. Martin is the author of a really surprisingly large number of books that makes me feel totally inadequate. Yeah, I stopped counting. Most recently, Active Passivity, Over the Scope of Thinking, Acting, and Other Arts, and The Arts of Cinema, which may be translated into English at some point in the near future. His Aesthetics of Appearing has been translated into English in 2004. Martin was going to talk to us about Three Pictures in Encore, but is now going to talk about Four Pairs of Pictures. So let's welcome Martin.
Thank you very much, Stacey, and thank you very much for the opportunity to be here and to talk to you. Well, there is a change in my title, but since it isn't a telling title anyway, it doesn't matter. And being the last speaker of such a conference where everybody really speaks to more or less one point, I have a feeling that there won't be very much new I might be saying. However, I might fail in this attempt to repeat everything that has been said. I'll make four steps. I'll begin with some very elementary assumptions concerning pictures, since photographies are pictures. Then some starting point about concerning photography, and then I will talk about three pairs of photographs and one or two encores, which so has saved my original title here. And then I will draw some a little bit more bold conclusions, which might not altogether be trivial. Okay, let me begin with some basic assumptions concerning pictures. These are meant to be truisms, but I don't know whether you will agree. Unlike other forms of representation, we can easily say pictures do not operate in a mode of saying, but of showing. But showing, of course, is a form of communication, in my understanding. Pictures don't say anything, normally, if there are not words in it. But they show themselves, and they show something. Pictures are renderings of a variety of visual relations upon a limited surface. Images show something that appears only within their frame, however much they may refer to situations in the outside world, but they mustn't do so, but quite some do so. Through the medium of its appearing, the picture's appearing, a picture brings something to appearance. This is meant to be non-controversial up to this point. However, there is one consequence which is important for me and maybe for others as well. This is why two kinds of attentiveness are simultaneously required in order to treat pictures as pictures. This is a point which has been made by quite some theorists of the picture, such as Michael Polanyi, Richard Wolheim, Gottfried Blum, Max Imdahl, and others. And which I think is an evident but nevertheless important feature of pictures in general. We must be, and we often are simply tacitly, but sometimes even explicitly, attentive to the body of the picture, that is, the totality of perceivable appearances upon a two-dimensional surface. And we must be attentive to what is presented within the organization of this overall appearance. There's one specialty concerning artistic images. For especially, not only, but especially artistic images, the artistic image dramatizes this twofold dimension, and thereby it often explores the potential of images. It, that is, especially the artistic pictures, makes its appearing into the playground of an appearing that remains constantly dependent on the intensity of its own appearing. If you look at an artwork, a picture, let's stick to paintings for a moment, you have to find out what it is that it is showing. Sometimes it's simple, you see a person, if it is a portrait, you see straw in the snow, painted by Monet. Straw, is that an English term? You can identify something, but you haven't not got what the artistic gesture of the picture is, and you have to find out how this topic you can identify within the picture, if there is something easily to identify in the picture, which way it is presented to you. So you have always to come back to the appearing of the picture itself to see what it presents in what kind of manner, way, or style. And all this, what I've said so far, is true of photographic pictures as well, and especially, as far as the first two paragraphs are concerned, to artistic photography. Like all pictures, I would like to say, photos present the viewer with something exposed within a bounded space. This is trivial again. Like many artistic images, artistic photographs give rise and develop a back and forth between self-presentation and world presentation. I will go more closely into that in some minutes. But in photographic works of art, of course, this tension takes a particular shape, corresponding to and tangled up with other image genres, and yet differing from them. Now, since I said that the artistic image sort of dramatizes the potential of images in general, and I think this the same holds of art photography, this has a sort of maybe weird, maybe in the eyes of some of you, weird consequence that the paradigmatic cases for picture theory in general is the artistic picture. So this is something where there might be a divide between the analytic and the continental tradition. The analytic tradition usually starts with depiction in a rather narrow sense, and then sort of at a certain point starts about the specifics of art pictures. In the continental tradition, it is often the case that the starting point is taken to be the artistic image, because it shows what is all about the picture, even in easier cases. But I think this is a difference in the approach within the picture theory, but not necessarily a contradiction. And even in the Anglophone world, there are theorists like Danto, who sort of, in a way, starts with the artistic image from the beginning, him being sort of a concept artist in a very special way. But that's just an aside. But we can discuss that, whether these two approaches are compatible or not. But I think the artistic image is sort of the decisive proof for any theory of the picture in general. Okay, now some starting points concerning photography, specifically. Again, Bangor, sentence, photographies are pictures which have emerged from a photographic process. We have been talking about that the last 2 days already. And that is, in my understanding, a very simple explication. That is that in their genesis, an analog or digital camera, and thereby the causal impact on this device, has played a significant role. Now, the first, the analog or digital, put in brackets, indicates that I too don't believe that there is a great ontological split between analogical or digital photography. And the important formula is at the end of the of this sentence, significant role. I will comment on that. This is an important point for what I will be doing in a minute. What does it mean that photography has played a this sort of impact into a photographic device has played a significant role, making this picture, making us taking this picture to be a photo. Another topic is contingency. Again, a point we have already discussed about. The photographic image, I would like to say, at this very elementary stage, is bound to the time and place of its emergence more strongly than other form of image. More strongly is a comparative. The notion paintings can be bound in different ways to the scene they are in ways that have been mentioned already in these 2 days. But the photographic image interrupts the temporal and spatial continuum of the scene within which it arose, or the scenes within which it arose. This is coming, not a risky observation. And for this reason, I would like to say it remains contingent, or at least, I will come back to this point, at least a potentially contingent image, even when it seeks to strip itself of its contingency. One of my examples, which will deal with this possibility of stripping a photographic picture of its at least potential contingency. By limiting its perspective on whatever it displays, the photographic image keeps present the arbitrariness of its limitation. All this should not be, are not meant to be spectacular claims. Now, my next keyword is gesture. The photographic image, I would like to say, is linked by its technique to a gesture from which all its potential mysteries spring forth. What I will be saying now might give you the impression that I belong to camp one, although I believe that I belong to camp two, but this will be the end of the story. It entails, a photographic image entails the promise of being the index of a past present, that is, presenting a collection of objects or features actually present at a specific locations, the moment or moments the picture was taken. This is the promise or the gesture a photographic picture, I think, necessarily makes. However, as all of you know, and we've talked about it, one can intervene so strongly in the configuration of the objects in the image that it no longer refers to any specific time or place, even though what is visible in the image most definitely derives from photographic exploration. My examples were give a closer look at this possibility. Photographic images, that is, I would like to say, do not always keep their promise. It can be kept and broken in various ways. That was part of Paloma's talk, of course, and we discussed about that. But nevertheless, even where this promise is broken, it must be given in the appearance of the respective picture. You cannot break a promise that has not been given. This is true in our everyday life. If I promise to be punctual, and I'm not, only then I have broken this promise. Okay, that were some starting points, and now I would like to look at three pairs of pictures, maybe four, it depends on the time. And let me begin with a seemingly simple case. The next one is a complex one, and the third one is a case which maybe is a paradigmatic case, and then that would be a core. Let's see whether there's time for that. The simple case is this one. This is a press photograph from the Bild-Zeitung. The Bild-Zeitung in Germany is something like the Sun in England, with some difference. The Bild-Zeitung still has nudes on the front page sometimes. I've read that the Sun sort of doesn't have nudes
They're
anymore.
Back on page three.
They're back. Yeah. It was temporary.
Okay, then page three. Okay.
That's just the same thing.
This picture was presented in the Bild-Zeitung in January 2001, and the headline beyond the picture says, "What did Minister Trittin do in this violent demonstration?" Jürgen Trittin then was a minister in the German government, a minister of the environment, not a really successful one, but that's not the point. Everybody knew that Trittin had a past as a radical leftist guy. He was a member of one of these 527 communist parties we had at German universities in the 70s. He studied in Göttingen, so he had this radical leftist past, but he had become more or less, just like Joschka Fischer, more or less pragmatic, green politician. And this photograph, it is said in the subtext, you can't read it because it's too small. This photograph is from 1994. He then was a member of the state parliament in Lower Saxonia. Lower Saxony, I think is the term. And what does it show? It shows some sort of black people who are hiding their face. In Germany, they call themselves autonome, so the autonomous people who sort of fight against the state. And the 1st of May, they go out and fight with the police in Berlin. So these are autonome, or violent, anti-establishment, anti-state, anti-police people. And the blonde Trittin sort of seems to enjoy to join this couple. This is what the title says, and there are these two inserts. It says Bolzenschneider, means bolt cutter, I think is the English term. And here we have Schlagstock, Baton. Is it Baton?
Baton.
What do you want? Baton. Okay. So he's in the midst of this violent scene, and sort of the Bild-Zeitung was sort of having a campaign against the government, and especially against Trittin. Now, the interesting thing is that this is a fake picture, for an interesting reason. That there had been a picture, this photograph in one of the German TV channels, Sat.1, there is a reference in this subtitle we can read, and this looked quite different. This is the original photograph. First of all, we have color here, which makes quite some difference. I mean, besides this interesting correspondence with the t-shirt of Trittin to the Vortex, to the store behind, and you see, Trittin has leisurely clothing, and the person who is accompanying him in this striped t-shirt gives a different impression. What is more important is that the frame is a little bit wider. And because the frame is wider, just compare, look at this line here. What is missing in the Bildzeitung is the line which you can hear. And if you look at the original photo carefully, you can see that there is no beton, whatever you call it. It's a rope. And you can see that Trittin is walking outside the room. So these violent people sort of, which is a usual practice for these guys, they define themselves as a group by this rope which is around this couple. And here you can see more clearly that there is no bolt cutter, but it's a glove. Okay, so the Bild-Zeitung turned this photograph by sort of narrowing the frame and taking off the color, which makes it sort of much more give a different view to the scene. Here you see this aggressive couple, and giving the impression that Trittin, with a fierce grin, is sort of joining these violent people and enjoying himself. If you have a look at the original picture, this impression is not so. And in fact, Trittin, as a member of the local parliament, was trying to mediate between the violent people and the police. So that's the true story. And but it gives the colored picture with a wider angle. Gives a different, not completely, but a quite different view onto this configuration of objects you see here. And this is 3D mainly, but it is coupled with 3D. Trittin is 2D because he's the one who is the sort of the target of the Bild-Zeitung's publication. Well, 2 days later or so, the Bild-Zeitung had to excuse itself. It says rope instead of baton on Trittin photo. They said it was a mistake. A mistake. I mean, changing the color, narrowing the frame. Of course, it was not a mistake. It was a clear case of manipulation. So here we can already see that narrowing the angle and taking off the color gives a different view, gives a different interpretation of the same scene. And this, I think, is an important point. Okay, that was my first pair of pictures. The second photographs is again a press photograph. This is a photograph which was published by the in Germany. It was taken on the 15th of January 1990 and was published mainly one day later. And it says it's a picture about the storming of the headquarters of the Ministry of State Security in the former GDR after the breaking down of the wall. And this is not just a nice derangement of bureaucratic devices, but it's once more an eminent political photograph because it shows the sort of the outrage of the people who were sort of supervised and suppressed by the Stasi, which is the short form, and they destroyed the they entered violently entered this building and destroyed the equipment there. Okay, now there is the artist and photographer Thomas Demand. He made a restaging, a highly artificial restaging of this this very scene, and seems to have, or maybe even did, which did completely transform this scenery, but still is a restaging of this very photograph. And this looks like that. So the title is, this is from 1995, the title is Bureau. This is this is art photography. And many things here are significant. Here is not the color reduced, but the color is put in. So we have a black and white photo. And again, the angle is, so he zoomed into the, much more into the scene than is the case in the original photograph, and he left, there's quite some things left, and of course it's not the same arrangement, because Thomas Demand always photographs models made of paper and cardboard. He sort of rebuilds a certain scene. In this case, he rebuilds the scenery we see on the original photograph by sort of something. He makes some sort of installation here of cardboard and paper, and thereby giving his picture a very strange effect. The original picture is a very contingent constellation of objects. It's a violent destruction, and the things happen to lie around in this room the way they do. Here, the contingency is sort of eroded because it's a careful, intentional reconstruction of the scene. And here we don't have what we have in many press photographs or everyday photographs, there's a famous sentence in Benjamin's short history of photography where it says the part of the fascination of photography is at least a tiny das winzige Fünkchen Zufall, the tiny bit
tiny of spark of contingency with which reality is seen here and now.
Say it out loud so everybody can hear it.
A tiny spark of contingency with which reality is seen the here and now.
Yeah. So this tiny spark in German is Fünkchen, which is fire. The burning contingency. It reminds of the contingency of the outer world, so in itself. And this seemed to be eroded, but since it is a photograph, I think this very photograph, in wiping out this contingency, thematizes this expectation of contingency we normally have if we look at photographic pictures. So it is meta photography in a way. It deals with its topic in a way is what is missing in this very photograph, being a transformation of the other photograph, and in a way it sort of deals with what is absent in its very staging. This is a very artificial maneuver, and maybe it asks, it puts the question how reliable photographs are in capturing the contingent moment they seem to present to us. Okay, my third pair. This is Gursky. We had Gursky already for some seconds yesterday. Am I wrong? Okay, this is one of them. this is one of my favorite gustis, because it's a strange combination of realistic gesture and imaginative composition. And it depends from which angle. You have to see it live. You don't see any, I mean, this is a very poor reproduction. I've seen it in an exposition in Munich, when you enter, it was a large group. It looks like an abstract composition. It could almost be Gerhard Richter and sort of paint putting with this long device over the canvas, or it looks like a window shape, sort of a shabby window shape. So it might be realistic or not. If you get closer, the title is Belitz. If you live in Berlin, you know what Belitz is. Belitz is a countryside near Berlin where the Berlin people get their asparagus from. And when you get close, you see that these black lines is the covering of the asparagus field, so that the asparagus is growing faster than usual. And this open spaces is where the workers are cutting the asparagus out. And you can, if you get close, you can see. You can. It's not as diffuse as this looks here. You can see the people at that time, usually Polish guys from Poland who came for 2 months to Belitz or to the other countries in Germany to cut the asparagus. So it is at once an abstract painting. It looks like a painterly ornament in a way, or a construction of lines and spaces, but at the same time, it is the capturing of a brutal, rather brutal agraric economy. So it has both at once, and of course, it is a integration of, I don't know how many of several photographs, as often in Gursky, and at a viewpoint, sort of in view from nowhere. It's not a viewpoint anybody could have taken who walk around Belitz, because it's sort of from a certain height looking at this scene. So we have here an imaginative photography which shows us something which could not have been seen anywhere. It's not a case of imagining seeing. I don't know what that is anyway. So the imagination is in the photograph. It gives us an imagination, imaginative view of something which in a way is out there, but it has been taken from buildings, but integrated into a photo, I would say, photographic picture which gives you a view, it gives you a sight into this, interplay between concrete, being concrete and abstract at once, and opening that kind of view to the world and itself, the way I describe. There's another famous Gursky which I will not comment on. This is even more famous a little bit earlier, Montparnasse. This is a combination of two views of this complex built in the 70s, and you have the same effect. See, if you see it from great distance, it looks like an abstract painting. Again, you can think of Gerhard Richter. He has this color field, huge color field installation he made for one of the last documentaries. If you get close, you can see the people. You can identify many things in the picture. I'm showing you this because there has been an article in the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung some weeks ago, because Gursky had his 60th anniversary, and the journalist says this picture shows something which one cannot see, which is wrong. I mean, you can see it. It shows something which you can see, but only here. which you could not see outside. If you go to Montparnasse, this building is probably still there. It's not possible to see it out there, but it can be seen here and only here. I think this holds for every photographer. I'll come back to that. But the interesting point is Niklas Mark is going on and says Goethe's pictures, if you take them seriously, aren't photographies. This is one of the points we discussed yesterday. But they are computer-generated inventions. They are printed data which remember us of photographers. So he's one of the guys who say, this is not photography, which I think is clearly wrong. This is photography, but I will just leave it at that. Just have a short look at my fourth pair of pictures. This is a photography of a photographer, less famous, but still a very good photographer named Matthias Hollander. Her is the title. It is taken from the, Natural History Museum in Paris. It was originally taken in 1991, but exposed only in 2007. You see in the foreground, this is 3D again. In the foreground, a sea lion, so the skeleton, it seems to grin at us. The sea lion in the foreground, and many skeletons of different animals. What the photographer did, there is quite some post-production involved here. It's not a montage, but he took an electronic pen and sort of was redrawing the shapes of the figure, so give it an impression as if it would be a drawing. Now this is a case where we can discuss, what is it? Is it a photography or is it a drawing? It clearly is photography. Maybe it entails elements of a drawing, so why not? So there can be cases like that, and it gives these guys here the impression of sort of lightness and very figurative impression. But this Matthias Hollander is a painter as well, and he has made a painting of this very scene. Again, the angle is a little bit, you put the same photograph in the CinemaScope. Now this is a painting, and it looks quite different. It gives, again, a different view to the same scene. For me, this looks like a laboratory of robots. If you've seen the movie iRobot, you have scenes like that, which have an overview of this laboratory by these guys, which will turn out to be bad, sort of just wait to get going and put the good guys. No, they're in the good guys, of course, and the commercial, the trust, the people of the trust who invented them into trouble. But if you go close to this picture, you can see it again. You see that it is painted. You clearly see it. It's full of. He makes many layers. It's full of dots of paint. They almost look like pixels, but it's clearly painted, and then it has a very even surface and looks like a photography, but clearly I would say is a painting of course which is involved in a dialogue with which presents a dialogue between painting and photography, and the presence of these animals is much more diffuse and much more corporeal because they seem to come out of this humus of color they are made of. Okay, my last example. This is one of the encores. Is this photograph by this picture by the architecture. If you look closely at this picture, you can see that some things are wrong. It looks like more or less idyllic landscape. The motif is clearly in the tradition of landscape painting. The trees are extremely high compared to the people. Okay, it's again a montage. It's again a montage of pictures, and you have this tourist sitting here. It's not a breakfast in the outside like in Monet. It's banal tourists, and they're looking into the same scene. So just like Caspar's Friedrich, you have this hook figure or bilder. I cannot translate it. So you are sort of forced. And this is a very complex dialogue again between photography and painting, because these people here and we don't look into a scenery which is anywhere out there, but we look, when we go to the outside, we are sort of manipulated by the paintings and by the views which are imposed by art. And so we look into our own imagination. This is part of the point of this picture. I would say it's a photography and not a painting, although it plays with the motif of it. Okay, this was just a short look at some of the things you can do with photography. And now my concluding remarks will be just comment on some catchwords I have used before. The first is interplay, especially artistic image. This is one paragraph I've presented you more or less before. Especially the artistic image, I've said, makes its appearing into the playground of an appearing that remains constantly dependent on the intensity of its own appearing. This might sound a little bit mysterious, so let me explain why I think it's important. This potential interplay between presentation and presenter, which is always going on in the artistic picture, I would say is entailed in photographic pictures as well, even though it doesn't play a role in many of the routinized forms of use. Now, when I will have a look at the sports pages tomorrow in the play, I will probably enjoy myself looking at Arjen Robben, who has scored twice or even more now. The score was 7-0, but I looked. I'm a fan of Bannon. I look at Arjen Robben scoring, which is interesting. Okay, it's full of scoring, but I won't take care of this interplay between what's to be seen and what is the point of presenting this photograph. I will immediately say, okay, Arjen Robben scoring. Yeah, I think it is 13th or 14th goal. So there are many uses of photography, as there are many uses of other pictures where this interplay is, we don't care about the interplay. We talked about the interplay of CD and 2D yesterday. Artistic pictures often sort of expose such interplay. The general notion is here this interplay between, you cannot find out what is presented. You cannot see what is presented as far as artistic pictures are concerned if you aren't aware of the presentation. So this dialectic, if you wish, holds for some photographic pictures as well, but it's always potentially there. Think of the treaty. If you look at these two treaty photos, you can see what a huge difference it makes if you narrow the angle a little bit, and if you wipe out the cover. There you see how pictures, how the staging of photographic picture makes a huge difference to what they present to us. Okay, that dramatization, artistic photographies often dramatize even this tension between representation and presented, or between showing and shown in a special manner. Now that's the point, the specificity of, now I'm concerned with the specificity of photographic pictures. They put, or at least can put into question, what, I don't know whether this is working, this really works in English, but you know what I'm, maybe you know, you can guess what I'm at. They put into question what that was, and how it is to be seen. What is to be seen in them here and now? Artistic photography. It's not clear what's going on. Think of Thomas Demont, think of Gorski and the other examples of guilty. Now, let's have another look at this promise I've been talking about. The gesture of the photographic image, I was talking about half an hour ago, I would like to say, is a variant of the promise any picture is making. Namely, the promise to show in its own way what is, in such a way, visible only in the respective picture. This is a promise, if you wish, that any picture makes, and especially any artistic. Photos, however, achieve this with a particular accent, namely, what is visible in them are states of affairs given always as well, given outside the picture. They do display states of affairs that have been there outside the pictures, which have remained visible in what the surface displays. This is the, and this, there might be many paintings which do that as well, but it's not constitutive of a painting to doing something like that. And just to think of the frame thing I've been talking about, or this famous saying by Stanley Cavell, Dermot quoted yesterday, it's not in the claim of reason, of course, but in the world viewed on page 23 of the painting is a world, photograph is of a world. This is an overstatement, but the truth in it is that it's true of every photograph, every picture that we count, we take to be a photograph, but it's even if we have doubts concerning painting, because if you look at a Canaletto which shows the Redentor, you can ask yourself, what is it? What has been there on the right? Has there already been this noblest of noble Venice hotels? I mean, Cipriano. What's in it? It's right of the Redentor in Venice. So in some paintings, of course, you can ask what has been or what was left or right. On the top or on the bottom, but in the photograph, you always can pose this question, which you can't do with concerning paintings. Imagination. I only have three more slides. Photographs offer their own, however much distorted or transformed, the Tritt case or the Gorski case, view upon irreversible past circumstances. They never just show what has been out there. They present to us a view upon what has been somewhere. And they never present a view on everything that has been present before the camera. Always select. This is a topic we had in these 2 days ago. They solely present a view on those temporal and spatial configurations which are visible in the photograph. Lots of things which have been out there in front of the camera are not to be seen in the photographic picture. Art photography, I would like to add, often uses this disposition for the creation of imaginative views on their subject, as evidently in the Dimond case and in the Guski case and in the Hollander case, that is, of perspective which one even in principle could not have taken vis-à-vis the scene or scenes where the photograph was taken. And this imagination is in the photograph. It is created by the photographic process. Now, another point, it's a complex point, I will just touch it at the end of my talk and not go into it, is the question of tense. Think of Roland Barthes in the Chambre Claire, he makes the time punctum is a huge matter in Roland Barthes, but I won't go into that. Here's a very bold claim, which I believe to be true. Self-presentation, we should remind ourselves, is a considerative feature of all art forms. And I mean all art forms, be it music or painting or sculpture or architecture, whatever. Self-presentation is a considerative feature of all art forms, whether or not or to which degree they proceed through representation, narration, fiction, or faction. By the exposition of their presence, they present or establish a presence. Music creates in presenting its configuration and duration of sounds and sometimes even noise, and creates a presence within the room or space it is to be heard. A building creates, transforms the space where it is established, and so on. Maybe you have doubts concerning literature, but we can talk about that. All modes of artistic presentation, if this is right, all modes of artistic presentation operate in present tense. Or even if past tense is their primary temporal attitude. So narration usually is performed in past tense or thought to be, it's not true. Filmic narration, in my theory, is presented in present tense. But literary narratives usually are delivered in past tense, although there are novels who are written in present tense. Virginia Woolf, Claude Simon, Peter Handke, Rob Grier and others, whatever that means. But since if self-presentation is constitutive for being an artwork, then there's always a dimension of present tense entailed in their performance or presence. Even if past tense is their primary temporal attitude. And photography is tied to past tense. This is its primary temporal gesture. It shows something which has been there or somewhere has been. This is considerative for photography, not for film, if you ask me, but this is a different topic. But if the first two paragraphs are correct, then even photography, especially art photography, entails a dimension of present tense, at least potentially. And this, therefore, we have a specific temporal dialectic of presence and absence in photography. What I was trying to say is that the gesture of photographic pictures must not be to reduce to the factual evidence, for this is only one, however, prominent mode of their use. The aesthetic power of especially artistic photographs lies instead in their capability to stir up an interplay between presence and absence in different meanings concerning the what is captured by the frame, what is captured by the mode of, by the time of exposure, and all these other features we have been talking about, and even this interplay between the two tenses, presenting themselves here and now, but with a gesture capturing state of affairs in which have taken place in past times. Thereby, this is my last sentence, they achieve, or might achieve the power to lend the past in the present a significant presence, and thereby to explore its, that is the photographs, and our position within biographical and historical time. Art photography often poses the question of what is our stance in time? This part, again, in the second part of Champlain, but in other modes, it can work quite differently. And they pose the question about their own position to time. What's up with their own position in time? So I would say that photographic, especially art photography, has the capability or power not just to make us sure about any instance that has been there, but to also the power to make us, this only works in German, sicher und unsicher, they also have the power, that's very important, to make us unsure about what has been going on there. So it's not just a medium of producing certainty by means of visual presence, but at the same time they have the power to make us uncertain of what has been there. Thank you.